is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
You might think that the Yankees are more desperate for this series, but maybe it's a little closer than you think. It is me, Chris Carlin, with you on 98.7 ESPN at 800-919-3776. People, next 3.5 hours, let's make it roll. We've got plenty to get into. We're going to talk some Giants later on. Jordan Ronan is going to join us to talk about these Giants. We'll get into some basketball as well with Damian Lillard, with Luka, and with Donovan Mitchell. And who is actually going to be available this offseason via trade? We'll discuss that and so much more at 800-919-3776. On Twitter, it's at Chris Carlin. Instagram, that guy Carlin. So you naturally would assume that this is a much, much more important series for the Yankees than for the Mets. And frankly, I would understand where you're coming from with that, but let's be clear. This is exceptionally important for both teams. You know, let's discuss the Mets for a moment, because we have spent an awful lot of time on the Yankees, and we will, as much as you want to get into. They're obviously squaring off here in about a half hour. But, you know, the Mets being in first place, you feel great about that, right? You feel like they have really done a nice job to be where they are this season. And they have. But frankly, they haven't done a good enough job. They've been dealing with injuries. We know all about that. But they have had opportunities to blow this a little bit more wide open. I liken it to a basketball team that in the first half of a game forces 14 turnovers from their opponent, and their opponent shoots 30% from the floor, and you're out rebounding them by 4 or 5, but you're only up by 4 points. In other words, so much has gone in your favor that to only be up by 4, you really haven't taken nearly enough advantage of what's happened in that first half, of all the mistakes that your opponent has made. Well, it's similar with the Mets. And look, their run differential is a -3 right now, and part of that is obviously losing 20-2. I'm not going to argue that point. But when you look at the Nationals and the way they are playing right now, when you look at the Braves and the way that they've played lately, somewhat better, and they obviously did a number on the Mets the last couple of days, you have to understand that these two teams have played so much further under what was expected this season that the Mets at 41-36, only having a 2-game lead on the Nats and a 3.5-game lead on the Braves, they haven't taken enough advantage of that. There were chances here to blow this a little bit more open. The Mets should probably have a 5-6-game lead right now, and they don't. And that is an issue. The Phillies are within striking distance. You know, that can't be the case. It can't be the case. They have taken advantage only a hair of what they were capable of doing. Why is that? Well, they haven't hit consistently. We understand this. They haven't put themselves in that position to be more successful offensively. And that has hampered them, there's no doubt, because they have not pitched poorly by any stretch. They have done what you would consider to be a pretty solid job overall. I think it's impressive what they've done. They've got the fourth or fifth best ERA in baseball as a team? That's why they are where they are. But that's where, when you talk about run differential, aside from the 20-2 game, it is really not big enough. And that shows you that over the span of this season so far, through 80 games, roughly, the Mets have not really distinguished themselves. They've played 77 games because of the games missed at the beginning of the year, and they sit here with a two-game lead. And the Nats and the Braves, I think we'd all agree, have been bad in the first half of the season. And it has me a little skeptical about where they are headed. Are the Mets actually a good team, or are we watching, and I hate to put it this way, but it's a pretty apt comparison, are we watching the Knicks of this past season, where they actually looked pretty decent, but it turns out they really weren't all that good. They really played over their heads. And it's different in basketball because of how hard they played all season long. But you get the point. The idea that a team that is in this position right now would have had a chance to go further, a chance to open up a lead and give yourself a little bit of cushion to work with. That would have helped them immensely. Immensely at this point. And yet, here they sit. And they've got Milwaukee, a pretty good team, next week. And then they've got the Pirates before the break. The Mets being in first place, you want to feel good about that. I get it. I totally get it. I do worry about how good they actually are. Now, in the early part of the schedule, in the second half, it's actually not terrible. But I really would have liked to have seen them open up a lot more because their offense, we had David Cohn on earlier today on Bart and Hahn, and he believes their offense is going to break out. I want to believe that. I'm a guy that doesn't fully believe something until he sees it. I don't know if that makes me a skeptic. I don't know what that makes me, other than heavy. What I do know is that this could have been a much larger gap to work with. And yet, here we are. Here we are. I don't need strawberry Oreos. I don't need Miller High Life flavored Oreos. Come on! God. All right. Wow. So if you're just joining us, here's what happened. I was on a few weeks ago on the morning show filling in for Chris Canty. And we played a round of Get to Know Your Co-Host. And I told a story on the air about how the last fight I got in my life wasn't even really a fight. Like I said, it was kind of a skirmish. And it was what I later found out to be, or apparently thought to be, the drummer from the Spin Doctors. And so his name is Aaron Comas. And this was in 1990 when I was a freshman in college. And so this was at a bar in Geneva, New York. I walked into the bar. The band was not playing at this moment. I didn't know the band at the time. They had not hit it as of yet. And so I went up to the bar. I ordered a beer. I was a big guy. Well, I'm still a big guy, but I was about 340 back then. And waiting for the beer. And I reached out for it, and this guy, who was about 5'8", 5'9", he was absolutely shorter than me, and he was about 160 pounds dripping wet, and had long stringy hair and kind of the frame of a beard. Definitely had, like, the crunchy vibe going on, right? Reaches out, grabs the beer, and says, "That's my beer, because I'm with the band." And I'm like, "What?" And he shoved me. And I was like, "What just happened?" And I turned and I threw a punch after he shoved me. Like, I was completely thrown off that this little guy shoved me. And I thought, well, he must have had a few in him or something. And he was not a big guy, little compared to me. I'm 6 foot. And like I said, much, much bigger back then. And so I throw this punch. It hits his shoulder. I didn't even get him solid. And then there were 10 people in between us. And I was immediately taken out of the bar and thrown out. And so I told this story. And I later, I knew the band was the Spin Doctors. And then later when they hit, I saw the video. And I thought it was much sooner than that. But he says that Little Miss Can't Be Wrong and the video for it would not have come out till 92. Which, okay. But I remember thinking, seeing the video and thinking, that's him. It's the drummer. That's who it was. And so I told this story. I just told the story on the K Show before. His buddy is listening. He tells him about it. Tells him, like, that we got in a fight at the train station. I'm like, that didn't happen. But he now denies it. Says he's about 6'1", about 200 pounds. But he sounds very easygoing, like a lovely guy. But the real question now is my whole life a lie? And what exactly happened? Who was that then? If he said, that's my beer because I'm with the band. Was it a roadie? Was it their weed dealer? Who was it? Because now my life feels empty. Call him in the Bronx. Help me make some sense of this. I don't know what's going on.
Well, Carlin, you got me concerned because if you sound like a phony to me, is everything else that you told me over the airwaves is fake too? Can you actually bowl? That's the big question. Can you bowl? Because I doubt it now. I really doubt it.
Listen, trust me, I can bowl. Don't worry about that. Okay? Don't worry about that.
Right. Well, to me right now, you are the second biggest phony on the station as of right now.
And the first would be?
Rick DiPietro, obviously.
Why is Rick the biggest phony on the station?
Well, Rick DiPietro is the biggest phony because clearly you are on the station and anyone who listens to it knows Rick DiPietro's personality and who he is and who he is as a person. So we know who he is. All that Michael K. love is complete phony farce and it's baloney.
Oh, stop it. It is not.
And if that stuff is real, then all the other stuff that Rick does is baloney. Which one is real? Which one's baloney? One of them's got to be baloney.
Rick's a tremendous guy. Rick is a tremendous guy, Cullum.
I agree with you, but I think that Michael K. stuff is baloney.
It's anyway. Not. They love each other. They're best friends. Yeah. They're as tight as tight can be.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Quick with my point would be... I just want to get one point with the Yankees.
Sure, go ahead.
We're at the point now, as the Yankees are currently constructed, they're not making the playoffs right now in my eyes. And I don't think there's any move that they're going to make or can make or anything like that to put them in the playoffs. So now I think they have to blow it up. Or if they don't blow it up and make monumental changes, then they're going to make monumental changes in the offseason and probably fire Brian Cashman. But they sold me a bill of goods that this is a good team, a playoff team, one of the best teams in the American League, and this is what it turns out. I went to multiple games in 2016 when they were bad, watching Travis Hafner home runs. I spent about $500 to $1,000 a year on the Yankees. This year, I haven't spent a dime, and I'm not going to spend a dime on the Yankees until I see at least three lefty batters in a lineup.
So is your biggest problem how the team is constructed or the money?
My biggest problem is how the team is constructed. I think they've been listening to analytic guys saying, hey, this would have worked in 2017. It almost worked in 2017. Let's build it again and do it in 18. Let's build it again and do the same exact thing in 2019. Let's do it again in 2020. They've been doing the same thing for 4 years now. They build it, right-handed, home runs. They're dated. Their analytic guys are getting analytics from the years prior. They have nothing for the future. It's baloney. And I can't stand having a short porch and you don't have enough lefties.
Listen, it's completely understandable, Cullum. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the lack of support. Thanks for calling me a fraud. The thing I would say about it, though, is simply this. Yes, they need lefties in the lineup. Yes, they need to be more balanced. And the idea that they just needed to have good hitters left them remarkably susceptible against hard-throwing right-handers. And we see that every time they play the Rays and they're dealing with that bullpen. It's a problem. It's a big problem. So now they're not exactly in a position at this moment to change everything about it. They're not. So what do you expect it to, what do you expect to happen to change it? Like, they can make trades eventually, but I think with how the team is constructed, it's going to be very difficult to make three or four deals at the deadline that's that are completely going to change things. Val in the Bronx is next, 98.7 ESPN. Val, what's going on?
What's up, my man, Chris? Don't feel bad, bro. Don't feel bad. I'm not giving up on you, Chris.
Well, listen.
I got some Yankee points.
Here's my problem, okay? I would never want to cast aspersions on a guy like that. You know, I would not want to throw that at him if that wasn't the case.
I got some Yankee stuff for you, but before I get to that, you got three ways that this could have went. You know, this could be one of them Chappelle Show things where it's like, you know, Rick James, I didn't do that, and bleep is a hell of a drug. He said he was, you know, it could have been a joint. You mixed up with a little bit of alcohol. Who knows? Maybe his memory's a little bit foggy. They play in the road. You see 50 million people every night. Who remembers stuff like that, you know? It could be the roadie. You know, like some other dude.
Maybe it was a roadie. Maybe it was somebody like that. But, like, even at, like, here's what I can't even think about, Val, is, like, even at that point when you haven't really made it, like, I should have asked that question. I should have asked him, like, could it have been a roadie? Did you have any roadies then? At that point, are you still a band that is loading all your stuff up in the truck and doing all that yourself?
Maybe they had a couple of hangers on, a friend or two that just moving around with the band. You never know.
Yeah.
But to get to my Yankee stuff, and I still believe you. I'm not giving up on it.
It's not that you don't believe me. I don't believe myself right now.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Come on. Something did happen. It's just a question of what, when, and who. We'll get down to that. And then think about it this way. You just made a friend. He said next time you're in town, you know, he's in town, show up, you got a beer. And I swear to God, some of the best friends I have in high school were people that I had a fight with. And later on that day, you know, before you know it, and then years later, you're thinking about that guy like he's one of your good friends. So you never know. But to get to my Yankee point, though, and I, you know, we talked about this the other day when they were talking about Rex and Judge. I really think that some of this has to do with us as an organization not properly embracing the analytics. And by that, I mean, I think we've gone too far overboard. Like, you know, you hear Bart saying stuff like, we don't have guys, like, who's the guy, what's our identity? Who's the guy that has that identity? A lot of from the manager down to the guys on the team, everybody's kind of paralyzed now. I mean, who's to say that that's dictating how they approach a game in terms of at the plate? Who's to say that that's dictating how the pitchers are even approaching the hitters that they face? Because maybe that's the game plan that they're being given from the analytics. And the minute that things go different from that, everybody's paralyzed. Because everybody's, even when they're on the field trying to play different, everybody's so focused on trying to do what the books guys say that they're just not playing the game and just letting it fly. And maybe a lot of this struggling, a lot of this, you know, the deeper we get, it gets to a point where just out of desperation, people just say, you know what, forget it. Let's just go out and play the game. You know, because, you know, even when they put up the seven, it's like little things like that that come back to haunt you. And then the next morning, you're not feeling so good about yourself. I don't know. I think there's some of that. They're trying too hard to be Tampa. And not that analytics don't mean what they do.
But I don't think they try too hard to be Tampa. I know what you're saying, Val, and thanks for the call. I understand it. But at the same time, I don't think for a second that they are a team that's trying too hard to be Tampa. I think that they are more trying to find their own way, not of replicating Tampa, but of employing analytics in a Yankee way so that it almost shows that they're a little bit smarter, if that makes sense. Like, they don't want to do it the Rays way. They want to do it incorporating ideas, but doing it the Yankee way. Like, there's, arrogance isn't the word. There's a desire to prove that you can incorporate it and still do it your way, and it's not exactly what they're doing. Well, here's the problem with that. What they're doing works. What you're doing does not work.
Ranger coverage coming up at 6:30. It's all about you. What was that?
I thought that 30 years ago, I got into a skirmish with the drummer of the Spin Doctors. I told the story on the Michael Kay show, and it turns out not likely to have happened. Probably wasn't him. And now the guy who told him about the conversation on the Michael Kay show allegedly is on the phone now. That appears to be Ben in Brooklyn. Ben, is this accurate?
Yeah, that's me, man.
So, Ben...
Yeah, I just feel bad that I didn't realize that Aaron being a jerk was central to the story. I was getting ready for my...
No, it wasn't central. But it wasn't central to the story. It was just, I was so completely thrown off in the moment that this person who was smaller than me did that.
Right. How good a look did you get at him? How good a look did you get of him that night? Because here's what we think. I was just talking with Aaron about it.
Okay.
And they did have some support. They had crew and management that was with them.
Okay.
So there's a couple of candidates, a couple of guys that could have danced in the same chorus line as Aaron.
As far as the look and such?
Yeah, exactly.
Now let's be clear. The exact quote from the person was, and I'll never forget the quote, was, "That's my beer because I'm with the band." And I took that to mean that he was in the band, but maybe he was just with the band.
Yeah, there's a manager dude that might have pulled something like that.
Would he be like 5'8", 5'9", and 160 pounds?
Yeah, Aaron came up with a couple of names.
Okay, well, now I'm feeling better. Now I have to come to the next show because we have got to sort this out.
Absolutely, man. I thought it would be super funny to have you guys talk. And then
it was hysterical. No. Aaron was great. No, Aaron was great. It was hysterical. But you got to understand, like, I have lived the last 30 years believing that it was Aaron.
That it was the drummer from the Spin.
I never went to go and look up what his name was. You know, I remember at the time seeing that video, and I guess it was, you know, it's 30 years ago, so I guess it was, you know, longer in between when I saw the video when I saw him. But I swear to God, when I saw the video, I'm like, that's him. That's the guy. That's who was with the band. And, wow. My mind was blown today, I have to tell you. Blown.
Well, I'd love for you guys to meet, man. He's an amazing guy.
He seems like a terrific guy. He was super nice on the phone, you know. And now I feel horrible that I haven't told this story like 10 times. It's been on the air. It's been like maybe two or three, maybe. But
that was the first time. I listen to you all the time, but that was the first time I'd heard it. And it absolutely, you know, I heard you talking about Spin Doctors and getting in a fight, and I figured it was with Chris or something.
No, why was he a candidate, the lead singer?
And then I hear you say Aaron's name, like kind of mispronouncing it. I was like, oh my God, I got to give Aaron a call.
Yeah, I just, like, in the middle of talking about it, I Googled it. And then after I was done talking to the boys, I went back and looked at, like, setlist.fm. You know, to see if it had, like, a tour schedule. And sure enough, November, I think it's November 6th of 1990, the Rum Runner in Geneva, New York.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Ben, listen, do me a favor. Give your number to our producer, and I want to try to come see a show. That would be hysterical to talk to him.
Right on.
That's awesome. Thanks, Ben. That's cool. We should have asked Aaron for his number earlier, but that... See, now I feel even better because he said we came up with a couple of candidates as to who it could have been. Okay, now we're talking. Maybe the big fella's back on track and it just wasn't the drummer. It was a roadie or a manager or somebody like that. Okay, now I'm feeling like I'm not such a fraud. Play that for Rothenberg. Does it change your evaluation at all of the situation, Anthony Pusick?
Oh, yeah.
Does it change it?
Well,
how do you feel now?
Just saying we have a couple of candidates lets me know, A, this has probably happened before, and B, they having an understanding of who they think it could be. I believed that the story happened. I just felt bad for poor Aaron. He was like,
I feel terrible that I have wrongly accused him of this. at least in private circles for years, and publicly today and a few weeks back, but I never thought that it was anybody else, because I swear to God, when I saw that video, I'm like, that's him. But it turns out it wasn't. Like I said, but when the person said, I'm with the band, he didn't say I'm in the band. He said, I'm with the band. But I took that to mean that he was in the band. Wow.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah.
Jacob, what is your evaluation of the situation at this point?
I feel like I'm watching an episode of Law and Order right now.
We're just trying to piece all the pieces together.
Right now, I'm just waiting for the lineup so we can just pick them out and, you know, see if it matches in court.
Oh, that's fair. Like, you know, oh my God. Like Lenny Briscoe's going to come out any point right now and make some kind of wise ass comment about the drummer of the Spin Doctors. Oh, well, music's over or something like that. Oh my God. This is just such a bizarre situation. Sam in San Antonio is up next. Sam, what's going on?
What's going on, Carlin? How you doing, my brother? I hope you have a safe holiday weekend. And just real quick to your screener, he put me on hold. I just wanted to tell him to have a happy, safe 4th as well. He's a real cool guy. So to get to this, man, you know what, Carlin? I'm always going to be on your side, man, but what day was that? Was it last week that you had that interview with that lady that interviewed the commissioner? That was a great piece, by the way. Was that last week?
That was Britt Ciroli, yeah, last week.
All right, so you lost a little cool points with me last week, Carlin. You know I still love you, man, but
what did I do?
Hold for like 2 hours that day and you without even going to me.
Then I owe you. I will make sure I get you on.
I'm not holding it personal.
Yeah.
So if I may just shed my 2 cents on this. Honestly, you know, the truth is always somewhere in the middle. Now, maybe it really was him, but he said that he was the drinker. And the other thing that he said does affect the memory. So maybe he doesn't remember it at all. I'm just picturing this in my head. The height thing is an issue. Do you remember maybe you were like on a step up somewhere closer?
No, I wasn't. And here's why I remember specifically, because when you went in the bar, if I remember correctly, you went down like 3 steps and I went down those 3 steps and I took like 2 or 3 steps in and the bar itself was actually right there on the right. The bar was pretty packed that night.
Before you cut me off, I do just have one baseball question though.
Sure, go ahead.
Carry on.
No, I was definitely on the same level as this guy. And why I was so thrown off was that this guy could not have been more than 5'9". And I'm 6 foot and he was rail thin. And I just remember thinking, really? Like, if I fall on top of this guy, he's going to die. You know? So, anyway.
You know what's really cool about the story, though, is that, you know, and let's just assume for a second that it was somebody else. I'm thinking it might have been just somebody with the band that was pretending to be more important than they are, because we all know roadies are like that. What was cool about the story is that, you know, he called in and he didn't rip you on it. He was accepting of it and also...
That's very true. He could have called in and just torn me apart.
There are some decent human beings in the world.
Yeah. No, he could have... Totally chill guy. That's very true. He could have ripped me to shreds and he didn't.
That was real cool. Very entertaining story throughout the day. Before I ask you my baseball question here, going back to that same day last week, it was actually kind of funny when you did the moment with the big fella with the K show. He caught you off guard with a really genuine compliment, and I think it's absolutely true. You're great at what you do, Carly. All jokes aside,
Sam, that's very sweet.
And if you remember, you kind of stuttered there. I think he caught you off guard. If you remember what I'm talking about,
I do. Now, it was a very nice compliment.
My baseball question to you is: I listen to Michael Kay all the time, and I get it. I totally get it that analytics is not going anywhere, and a lot of callers call Michael Kay and kind of get under his skin with that. That's not my angle here. Michael Kay is obviously an announcer for one of the most elite teams in the league. My question here, when he breaks it down, my question to you, and if you could relay the question to him, is: why does analytics devalue a hit? Because they're only valuing a walk, a strikeout, which I don't understand, and or a home run. Why is a shit being devalued? I just don't get that.
Yeah, I don't understand it either, and I appreciate the call, Sam, because at this point, a hit shouldn't be devalued because part of OPS is slugging percentage, and slugging percentage is figured out by total bases. So extra base hits, the home run, obviously counts for a lot. But it devalues the hit because there's, I guess because it looks at it that doubles and triples don't necessarily add up, but walks and hits, singles, are the same thing to it. That's the way it seems to be looking at it.
Little known fact, I love candles. I
heard a great soundbite from Tim Kirchen explaining the Yankees and shaking things up, not with trades, but with the personnel they have right now.
They're in a lot of trouble. They have the ninth best record in the American League right now. So I talked to an Italian evaluator yesterday and asked him this question. Here's what he said. I would take Stanton and put him in the outfield every day. I would take Voit and make him the DH. I would make LeMahieu the first baseman. I'd take Gleyber Torres and move him to second base where he belongs. I'd either go trade for a shortstop and put Tyler Wade at shortstop. But this is not working right now. And that might potentially fix the offensive team, but then they would have to go out and trade for a starting pitcher because there's very, very little help in the minor league system, and they're going to have to go make one, if not two, major deals to get them back to where they need to be.
So I ask you this question at this point. If you are in that kind of situation and you need all of those changes, changing people all over the place, middle of the year, and you got to go and add two big people, a starting pitcher and a shortstop, and you're going to go over the salary cap threshold. Is it really worth doing all of that if you're in that much trouble just to get it right back and hopefully get it right? See, this is desperate times right now. That when you hear a scenario like that, we're talking about a situation that you don't ever see when it comes to the Yankees. It is a remarkable, remarkable thought that the Yankees are now in this spot of being just this desperate to even try to be in the mix this year for the wild card. You know, the division might already be gone. They're 9 games out for the American League East. 9 games out, and teams are playing better in the American League East. The wild card is the only hope, and they are 5.5 out, 5 in the loss. So we're going to sit there and assume that you can just right the ship like that with all those moves, and it will all work out just fine. Why would we think that? Why would we think that's even worth it? How does that make any sense? Think about that for a second. Well, we're going to take Stanton, put him in the outfield where he's a statue. We're going to take Voit. We're going to DH him. We're going to put LeMahieu at first. We're going to put Torres at second. We're going to trade for a shortstop. We're going to trade for a starting pitcher. What? Like, think about that for a second. That is the major shakeup that you can do right now. And then you heard the Greeny promo a minute or two ago talking about Aaron Boone and what he can do now that he has the backing of the owner. He has the backing of the owner for the moment, but we all know at the end of the year that he'll be gone if this doesn't turn around. We know that because it'll be the easiest thing to do. So I just asked this question. Are the Yankees worth saving? You are beyond desperate right now. Are they honestly worth saving? I have to know if you think that this season is worth saving. Because if it's not, what do you do? Well, you know where I've been on this. I feel like you're never going to have greater value on Aaron Judge than you're going to have right now. Michael was arguing earlier today, trying to trade Aaron Judge during the season is a very difficult thing to do because you really want to be able to take your time to put a deal like that together when you're talking about one of the most popular players in the game. I get that. I kind of asked the question as far as why can't that time be taken right now once we get past the draft? Should it really take more than a couple of weeks? I don't think so. Fans love the guy. It's a very difficult thing to do. I understand that. Number 99 is on jerseys and jerseys everywhere in that building. They actually set up a seating section for him. That's how popular he is. But are you more interested in having the superstar player, or are you more interested in winning? We had David Cohen on Bart and Hahn earlier today, and Bart asked David, should the Yankees right now, in trying to rebuild, trade away Aaron Judge? Here's what David had to say.
If you do make that kind of move, you better be sure on who you get back in return. And that's the question. There's no guarantees, especially with young players or young prospects. If you go play a numbers game and say, we're going for quantity, we're going to just reimagine this whole thing, we're going to blow it up, and then we're going to pick all these young prospects, the best deal we can find. Well, you better be sure about it. You better have done your homework. And even with that being said, there's no guarantee that any of those young prospects would work out. And you've just traded the face of your franchise. And, well, you know, one of the big faces in baseball, Aaron Judge's jersey is in among the top five in sales across the league in Major League Baseball. I mean, he's an enormously popular player. You better think twice before you decide to make that kind of a move.
So I get that. And he's right, because it is this level of player. It is somebody that is going to be nearly impossible to replace on a lot of levels. But isn't it best for the organization if you are in this position? And let's be honest, a year and a half from now, you're not re-signing the guy. The only way that you're re-signing him is if you feel like he's able to stay healthy for the long term, which means that he got through the rest of this year and next without an injury that cost him any more than a couple of days. And you feel like he's going to be able to play the outfield for a while. Guys, you have to really come to terms with this. Aaron Judge is going to become a DH within 2 to 3 years. He's not 24, okay? When he's a free agent, he's going to be 31. So I'll say that he can play the outfield until he's 33, maybe 34. That's pushing it. So let's think about that for a second. Judge isn't going to get a 10-year deal, but he's probably going to get a 7-year deal somewhere. And that deal is going to be worth probably $40 million. So that's $280 million for a guy that in a couple of years is going to be a DH. And you already have a DH that is signed through 2028. They're basically going to only have about 1 or 2 years apart as far as how long they're going to be here. That's how long he has signed through, Stanton. And you're going to have two of the same player. Hard decisions, I know. It's not like you want to keep Stanton over Judge. If this were the discussion, I would not be in favor of trading Judge. If there was no Giancarlo Stanton, I would absolutely want to keep him for the long term and sign him, assuming that he could stay healthy. But you can't unring the bell. He's here. He's here. And he's not going anywhere. And it's going to be a few years before you can even dump him off on somebody else and eat a lot of that money. So I can't logjam my roster like that. So that brings me back to the initial point. Yes, I better be right on the players that I'm bringing back. There's no arguing that. And on the players you're bringing back, because you're potentially talking about a year and a half, you need to bring back a major league ready, really quality starting pitcher and a couple of top prospects. Because Aaron Judge doesn't just mean that much in terms of his production. he means that much in terms of jerseys sold and all that stuff. So, with all of that now being the case, I have to look at this and truly give what's best in the organization and their future the most consideration. Because I can't sit here and tell you that right now the Yankees are worth saving when you have got an awful lot of deck chairs on the Titanic to shuffle around right now. Even if you do all of what Tim Kurchin is saying, put Stanton in the outfield, DH Voit, LeMahieu at first, Torres at second, trade for a shortstop, trade for a starting pitcher. There are no guarantees on that front either. And you're adding more salary. You're over the luxury tax, which I know everybody gets hung up on, but understand you're not only over it, you're paying 50% more. And you want to stay under it this year so you can reset it for next year. And if you need to go over it, you can go over it. There are so many different aspects of this. But if you just think of it from a 30,000 foot view over the next 4 weeks, I have a feeling you're going to come to the same conclusion that I have. The Yankees this year are not worth saving because they're just not good enough. I am wearing my cranky pants. I just honestly don't believe that at this point the Yankees season is worth saving, because in the end, any of the solutions that you have aren't really going to change what the ultimate outcome is. And it's just potentially going to end up costing you a lot more money. Eli in Washingtonville, next on 98.7 ESPN. Eli, what's up?
Hey, Carl, what's going on? Listen, man, I agree with you 100%. I think they should just let the ship sink. At this point, you know, I called it before and said I don't trust Cashman making no moves at all anymore. You know, just that Stanton trade just sank this whole team, like this whole franchise for the next 6 years, and imagine just a simple thing as keeping Didi in the team would have solved a lot of problems. Would have kept, you know, this guy Torres at second. It would have gave you a left-handed bat. The guy wasn't expensive, and he was a good guy for the clubhouse. Like, simple moves like that anybody, these were no-brainers. And this guy just, man, I'm telling you, I can't believe the owner of the New York Yankees doesn't see that his team is an embarrassment to baseball.
Well, I mean, let's not get nuts here, Eli. Relax on embarrassment to baseball. Thanks for the call. They're not an embarrassment to baseball. That's not what we're talking about. I think that what more likely we're talking about is your frustration being a fair criticism of the construction of the team. And getting on the GM, I get it. What my main issue here, too, is when you get to the end of this year and you're truly evaluating all of this, you have to understand, it can't be about being loyal. You've been here a long time. And sometimes it's just time. Sometimes you need to just change things up. You need to change up who's making all the decisions and who's evaluating players and how you're evaluating players and how you're building an organization. So to me, that's where this gets a little bit dicey moving forward. And I don't think that where they are right now is easily fixable. So that's why when you're talking about making all of those moves that we heard from Tim Kurchin earlier, that one talent evaluator would do, like, if you have to do all that just to try to fix what's going on, I mean, that's entirely too much to try to do in the middle of the year, shuffling guys all over the place and putting somebody in the outfield who hasn't been there in forever. Frank in Harlem is next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Frankie, what's going on?
Hey, big fella. I agree with you that you shouldn't have to go out and try to save the season. I think it's a lost cause already, and I think spending more money, more good money after bad, is just a bad idea. I do agree with Kurt Schilling, though, where you put Tyler Wade. I wouldn't even trade for a shortstop. I would put Tyler Wade at short. That improves your defense. You put Torres back at second, all that. I don't think that's really that difficult to do. All these guys have played those positions. The Mayhew plays different positions on a different day or every other day. So it makes no difference. As far as Stanton in the outfield, you know what? Let him play out there. If he gets hurt, he gets hurt. We don't have to worry about, well, we want to DH him. He needs a day off. So be it. And then you know what? In the off season, you look for an easy way out with Stanton. You look for a team that's okay, that is willing to spend money. If you have to eat most of it, you eat it. And you don't bring in another superstar.
But when you're talking about that, first of all, there's only so much. Like, they can't take Giancarlo Stanton and say, we're going to pay $165 of the $180 million left in his contract. They're not going to do that.
No.
And I don't think Major League Baseball would let them pay that much out.
They could probably do 120, 130. And you know what? God. You don't have to bring a big superstar in. You can bring a guy in that's going to play every day. He's going to hit 270, and he's going to hit maybe 20 home runs. You don't need a big star. Right now, you have that in Judge. You could literally next year have Judge say, hey, Bud, you're playing 2 to 3 games in the outfield, 2 to 3 games a week at DH, and that's what you're getting. That's it.
Appreciate it, Frank. Thanks for the call. They're not shelling out $120 million for somebody that is not going to produce for you at all anymore, and is just going to go away and has 6 years left in his contract. They're not going to pay a team $120 million over the course of that period of time to take a player off their hands. That's just not realistic, dude. That's not realistic. I know they're the Yankees, and you think it's an endless supply of cash. Trust me, there have been plenty of times where I've been frustrated and wished that they would act like the Yankees of old would have acted. It is a different time. But in this case, I just don't blame them. I really don't. But where this can't get lost is, if you're going to stay under financially, I get it. But then you have to look at the guy that is spending the money and how he's spending it and the results that you're getting. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. The whole idea of the bar having been lowered from win championships to win 95, 100 games, make the playoffs, and then we'll hope for the best. I don't know where that happened in the middle there. Because it was Brian Cashman who used to say, it's win a championship or it's a failure. Him and Jeter. I don't think it was just when Jeter left. So I don't know how this is going to play out. You know, if you go into the offseason and you're going to have trouble changing the players because of how much they're making, or you're going to spend more, which I think you could. Again, remember, when you reset the collective bargaining tax or whatever it is, the payroll tax, whatever you want to call it, you know what I'm talking about, the salary cap. When you don't use it 3 years in a row, it resets. So next year, if they go over, it's only 20%. And the Yankees have been more than willing to do that. They'll do it 2 out of the 3 years. It's just, I want to know how that money is being spent in a better way than how it's being used right now. Because right now, my resources, everything I've dedicated to this, it's not happening. And, you know, I said this with Michael and Don yesterday, and this is where it kind of frustrates me. Whenever the lineup comes down and it ends up with Aaron Boone, Brian Cashman says that Boone has the ability to change that lineup if he wants, but he better be right. Well, when you're making deals and trades and such, who is saying to Brian Cashman, you better be right? That's what I want to know.
It's not an egg. It's more of an ovid.
If you are on your way home from the stadium and you had tickets for tonight's game, it is rescheduled as a split doubleheader on Sunday. Again, both games will be seven-inning games. The first game will be at 2:05, and that is when the tickets from tonight's game are good for. Here's the deal. Fans holding paid tickets for tonight's postponed game may use them for the rescheduled game at 2:05 Sunday, July 4th, or exchange them to a similar 2021 regular season game at the stadium. But the tickets for tonight's game will not be valid for game two of the doubleheader, which is the originally scheduled game for Sunday at 7:05. So if you had tickets tonight and you're on your way home, they are good for Sunday at 2:05 or another game this year. They are not good for Sunday night. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Oh, and fans holding complimentary tickets or equivalent must use them for the rescheduled game. You can't use them for any other. You got to be paid for the other ones. Anyway, you get the point. 800-919-3776. Scott in New York City is up next. 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Scott, what's going on?
It's New City, but it's no problem.
Oh, I'm sorry. What do you got?
First time.
Who doesn't love Rockland County?
Oh, you know. Okay, all right.
Oh, I know.
I'm actually calling up from a grocery store right now, so don't mind the background noise. But two things real quick. The first one you kind of already said. I had tickets to Sunday night's game. You know, ESPN, nationally televised game, Yankees, Mets, going with a girl, like, that. I feel pretty, like, gypped out that they're doing split admission. And I think I've been noticing that, like, the Mets are doing single admission when they have double headers, but yes.
Well, but you know why that is? That's simply based on tickets sold. So, in other words, they had enough tickets sold for tonight and for Sunday that they have to do a split doubleheader, because if they tried to do a straight doubleheader, they would not have enough seats for everybody, and people would have to move seats and all that stuff. So you then, see what I'm saying?
Then tell everyone on Sunday, hey, you can go to the game, you know, game one, since you're only going to get to see seven innings of the game you paid for, and then give a rain check to everyone from today.
The problem is that, like, if a game, you know, if you go to a game and it gets rained out after five or six innings, and the game's official, you went to the game. That's part of the agreement that's on the back of the ticket. I know it's not great. You're missing out on two innings. But you know what? It's Sunday night of a holiday weekend. It's not the worst thing in the world. And frankly, if that date's not going well, you and I both know the better you can get, the sooner you can get out of there, the better. And we have been there, my brother.
Second thing real quick. You know, I think Cashman's like a smart guy and all, you know, with the way he finessed the Cubs and the Cardinals and everything like that. But how can, over the last couple of years, like, there's been, you know, consistent things that we keep coming up with, complaining about the Yankees, no left-handed batter, you know, defense. How could you not look at the last few years and think that letting go of Didi was the colossal mistake that Brian Cashman made in the last 10 years?
I think we can all agree it was a mistake. Colossal. You know, what Didi ended up getting, that's where it's frustrating. Like, that's where he ended up settling for 1 year and $9 million from Philadelphia. Didi Gregorius was worth keeping on a two-year, maybe even a three-year deal. And I know that they had no interest in what the analytics said and all that. But it's another proof positive situation where it's not all measured in the numbers. He was obviously a major leader for that team.
Do you think that's something they could consider bringing him back? You know, next, obviously not this year. I agree with you. I think it's a lost cause. But like next season?
I don't think that's likely. I think the ship on that has sailed. And thanks for the call, Scott. I really do. I think that there's enough that has happened between Didi and the Yankees where that's probably not a situation that's rectifiable. I don't think it's terrible, but I don't think it's a great situation. And, by the way, you know, Didi has not had a good year and has only played 30 games. So I think the ship on that sailed. Bringing him back on a two-year deal, that would have been worth it to me. You know, when you look back, that is clearly one of Cashman's best moves when you brought him in to take over for Jeter, because he came in as somebody that nobody expected a whole lot from. He almost felt like a stopgap at the time, and there was not pressure on him to be the next Jeter. And he developed into a terrific player for the Yankees. It's so good that, you know, you're able to come in and have an average season like he did in 2015 and was, you know, productive enough, but played an excellent shortstop that you felt good about it. And the next couple of years were a revelation, frankly. It was disappointing with how it ended, and it was disappointing that they didn't want to bring him back. Matthew on the car phone is next, 98.7 ESPN. Matthew, what's going on, bud?
So we are just we just got back from the game, and I heard you say that you think the season's a lost cause, and I just kind of thought it's July 2nd. The team's playing as bad as we possibly could be right now. And we're still in the race. We've got O'Day just pitched his first inning back the other night. Britton's coming back. Severino's starting to come back. And Kluber's going to come back in August and September. So I say to say the season's a lost cause, it's just way too early to say that.
Well, there's a difference between saying it's a lost cause and saying it's worth saving when trying to save it is shuffling around a lot of the team, meaning you're putting Stanton in the outfield, you know, considering a lot of different moves to shake things up. You're trying to get Stanton into the outfield to free up the DH spot a little bit more, play Voit at DH, play LeMahieu at first, you know, just a lot of different things that you could do to try to change it up, and then still having to add another bat, maybe a shortstop, and having to add a starting pitcher. Like, that's a lot. If you consider that what you need to do in order to save the season. So it's not calling the season a lost cause and saying if that's what it's going to take, it's not worth saving.
Well, I just think you have to do that because that's what it's going to take. And you can't just give up on July 2nd, especially because of the amount of talent you know the team has.
Matt, what do you want to do to try to save the season?
I think our bats are starting to heat up a bit. At least we've got Andujar who's starting to heat up. I think Stanton can start playing the outfield so we don't have to rely on guys like Frazier and Gardner to bat under 200. And to the getting another starter point, if we've got Severino coming back, someone like Tyone and Montgomery are completely functional as just rotation guys.
Listen, I don't know that I want to even call Tyone functional at this point. A 5 ERA is not functional. A 5 ERA is not a very good pitcher. You know, and when you're talking about the bats coming around, Matt, thanks for the call. Let's talk about the other night for a second, okay? I don't want to downplay it, but let's be realistic about what transpired against the Angels. Otani came out. He was terrible. He couldn't find the strike zone if he drove the ball there in an Escalade. And then they got two singles, a ground ball, and a ground ball double chopped the other way to score seven runs. They were not ripping the cover off the ball. They were not showing us all kinds of exit velocity on how hard the balls were hit. That was a bunch of walks, a guy who couldn't find a strike zone at all, and a couple of base hits. And LeMahieu chopping one the other way, did a really, really good job. But that was not like, hey, we're ripping it up. And then what happened the rest of the way? They didn't have another run until Gardner's solo shot in the eighth inning. Now, granted, all the innings count. And when you score eight, you should be able to win the game. But, like, I don't look at that and think, wow, this is massively turning around right now. There's no question that this is the turning point for the offense. You hope it's better, but I'm not counting on that. You know, just to go back to the other thought. An incredibly tough, tough date is a baseball game. And you might think, why is that? Well, at least the game's going on. Listen, what's the average length of a normal first date? 2 hours, 2.5 hours? Things are going right, maybe three. Okay. At a baseball game, you're sitting there, and it could be a 3.5 hour affair, plus travel to and from, plus potentially sitting in traffic. Plus, you could have some bad, you could have, you know, Tyler McGill out there on Sunday night, can't find a strike zone, and you're thinking in your mind, dear God, get some outs, will you? I got to get the hell out of here. This is a mess. You can never, ever, and this is dating 101, you can never, ever put yourself in a situation where time is uncontrollable. In a baseball game, time is merely a construct. It doesn't really mean anything. There ain't no clock on the night. So if you bail out early, really the only way to get out is if she wants out, and it's clear that she wants out and has no interest in staying for the night. Because if you want to bail out early, what happens? Well, A, you're the guy that doesn't stay to the end of the game, which, I mean, let's be honest, getting tagged with that moniker is not great. I've gotten hit with that one, justifiably so, a few times. But also, B, you're the bad guy. And I'm guessing that you didn't meet at the game. If you're a good dude, you have to get her back home. And whether that's driving her home or whatever, you got to do the right thing there. So you could be looking at a bad date that's 5 hours. No, 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 no. You got to be better than that. That's why you have to be pretty confident in the situation for the early relationship baseball game date. Hey, NBA game? You know what's going on. You're looking out for celebrities at the Knicks game. Who's in the front row? Take a look at that. You know you got a 2.5 hour affair at best, and boom, you're out of there. Can't do baseball. No clock. Killer. Absolute killer.